Maine, Maine, Maine Outdoors. From Rangeley to Eastport, Fort Kent to Kittery, the Maine Outdoors is waiting for all of us to see. The mountains, lakes, and rivers, the wildlife, and the woods are just outside your doorway, so get outside and find it in the Maine Outdoors. Fishing and hunting, winter, spring, summer, and fall, if it happens in the Maine Outdoors, they talk about it all. Just tune in your radio to 103.9. Jim and Paul and Bob and Matt are your Outdoors Hotline. Each Sunday night at 7 on WVOM. To find out what is happening, just listen to the radio to the Maine Outdoors.
Welcome to the Maine Outdoors. Here's tonight's host, V. Paul Reynolds.
Thank you. Thank you, sir. And you know, those of you who have been with our program for, 20 years maybe, you remember our late beloved co-host, Wiggy Robinson. How we miss Wiggy. Anyway, Wiggy used to draw a distinction between grouse and partridge. And tonight, we're going to kind of break that down into little bite-sized pieces and see if you know the difference between a grouse and a partridge. We'll be talking to Art Wheaton from Forest City. He's a registered Maine guide. He's from the Fable Wheaton family, and he'll be with us to talk about his view between grouse and partridge. We hope you stay tuned for that. And then between now and then, we'll talk a little bit about deer hunting and the rutting moon. I have some new information you may find interesting. Anyway, we're so glad you could be aboard our show tonight. The number to call if you want to be on the program, 1-800-966-1039. Our engineer, producer, the man behind the toggle switches there in the big studio is the Oracle of Grand Lake Stream, my friend Norman F. Plord.
Good evening, everybody, and how you doing, Paul?
I am doing great. For a guy my age, I feel fantastic.
How about you? Doing fine.
Doing good. Garden's all wrapped up?
Not quite.
No.
I've got a couple things that are still out there. I mean, kale can go quite a ways. So.
Oh, kale.
Yeah.
I have a hard time with that. I like arugula. But kale, I don't know. That's pretty tough to say.
I like it sautéed.
Do you? Yeah.
Yeah. I haven't tried the kale chips, but I hear that's good.
Yeah, I had some of those. Oh, you could choke to death on those real quick.
Right?
Anyway, Bob Lehman, who's our normal co-host in the studio here, can't be with us because of protocols, but he's with us. He'll be with us from his phone booth, and we had some good fishing experiences, and he will share those with you during the fishing report. Again, if you want to dash us an email, it's vpaulr@tds.net, and if you want to be on the show, it's 1-800-966-1039. Did I forget anybody?
No, I don't think so.
Okay, our other engineers, Jim Layton, Scotty Bates, we hope they're at radio side sharing the good news tonight.
I imagine it wouldn't be too long before Scotty heads south.
Yeah, it won't be. He may be on his way. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Anyway, right now, though, it's time for Outdoor Digest, brought to you by the Northwood Sporting Journal. Remind you again, this is the time of year to start thinking about Christmas gifts. If you're looking for a Christmas gift for the sportsman in your family, be sure to consider the Northwood Sporting Journal. If you're looking for a complete, comprehensive fall fishing directory report, where to fish in Maine, and fishing's not over for some folks, you can find out by going to our new website at www.sportingjournal.com. Okay, before we get to the fishing report, a couple of items. Grouse season, of course, is underway. It started on Saturday, and you can remember you get a bag limit of 3 birds. You can take up to 3 birds a day. Not sure possession limit. I think it may be 6, but maybe 6 or 8. Not sure of that. Anyway, grouse season's underway. If you're going to look for grouse, the smart money is betting on northern Maine, from everything that I've heard. All the reports are it was a good reproduction spring for the grouse, and so you should be seeing some pretty good grouse numbers up in the big woods. Also, the regular archery season has begun, and again, you can hunt deer during a normal archery season. You must have an archery license, and of course, you have the whole month of October to hunt deer for archery. Remember, if you do take a deer during the archery season, then you'll be not be able to hunt during the November firearm season. Unlike the expanded zone where you get an extra deer, you don't with the archery season. I think that still counts, doesn't it, Norm?
As far as I know, I don't think that's changed.
Yeah, I don't think that's changed. Okay, fall foliage. I don't know. Diane thinks that it looks a little faded this year. Do you find that the case?
Depends where you're at. I saw some pictures from northern Maine that was posted, and gorgeous scenery.
Yeah, yeah.
My niece posted them, and wherever she was at in the St. John Valley, she got some amazing photos.
Yeah, is it? You think it's by up north?
I think it's slipping by.
Yeah.
I mean, I was up just north of Patton last week, not this past week, but the week prior, and I think it was peaking over there. I mean, it was just gorgeous.
Yeah. So if you want to, if you haven't had a chance yet to go out and gape at the foliage, this is probably your last opportunity.
You want to hurry up.
You want to get at it.
Oh,
yeah,
yes.
You bet. Hard to believe November's coming on before you know it. Okay, I think it's time to bring in the band now.
I'm the big boss, Fast.
Yeah.
And you work for me.
Yeah.
This is my rock.
Yeah.
These are my
Mr. Lehman, you're in good form tonight.
Yes, thank you.
He's right on the beat,
thank
too.
Thank Jimmy Layton for that.
Okay, yeah, Jimmy taught you how to
he
do
started,
that.
He started that.
Yeah,
you know.
But your timing, your timing is extraordinary.
Timing's got real good.
Yeah, well, timing is much better. I think you're dragging it out a little bit. It's got a lot of life to it. That's great.
Yeah.
Well, what's going on in the fish? What's going on in the fishing world?
I heard you and your son was down at Grand Lake Stream. And you waded out in the lake above the dam, because it's very low water this year, terribly low everywhere, because the drought is desperate. But they've dragged the water down above the dam to about 2 or 3 feet and up. But you guys were smart. You waded right out to the sandbar out there. You must have gone out 100, 200 feet out and found the sandbar. I know. I saw him the day before find that spot, so he took you out, I heard.
Yeah, he did.
You guys slayed him.
We did. We did very well, and it's
That's
funny.
Nice.
Scotty found kind of a little yellow brick road, and when we walked out, I thought probably I was going to go for a swim. Water got about an inch from the top of my waders, but we were able to take a deep breath and make it out there. And once we got out there, the fishing was great.
And a little hairy, but, you know.
Yeah, and I caught a real nice one, Bob, on your barn special. Thank you for that.
There you go. All right, that's great. That's great. I wondered if you guys used those.
Yeah, we did.
And you also, did you get out of the hatchery, too?
Diane caught a nice one at the hatchery pool. I didn't have any luck there, but she caught one, again, on one of your barn specials,
Oh, heaven's sake. Isn't that great?
Yeah, how did you do?
Well, we, for a couple of days, we didn't do hardly. We cooked a few, but they weren't that, you know, right after it. You know, they just weren't. Kind of logy or something, a little warm water, and what we needed was some wind. Well, what storm went through down there, you know, and we were having breakfast at the time, but just before breakfast, there was a funny thing. We happened to say, we had a Pastor Mark Fowler, as you know Mark.
You bet.
He was with us, and he said a little prayer, and after the prayer, I said, give us this day our daily salmon. And we all said amen, and out fishing we went. Well, you know something? We really hadn't landed a fish, a good fish or anything, up until that time. We walked there with the wind blowing your line all over the place, and the rain pelting down.
The rain coming down.
And each one of us caught a beautiful salmon.
Well, there you go.
And that was Norm was one there. He got a nice one. I got a nice one. Mike Fowler, the pastor, got a beauty. And also, Jeremy Rollins got a nice one.
Good, right.
Four in a row, and Jeremy Rollins got another one, and then they quit.
Yeah.
But it was like a godsend, you know what I mean?
Well, the good Lord wants you to catch fish. You know that, Bob.
I guess so.
You bet.
Like Peter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know, the funny thing was when Scotty and I were out there risking our lives on the on that precipice out there, it was the funniest darn thing because Scotty would say, well, it's slow, Dad, right now, but if we just get a little breeze, and sure enough, we get a little breeze come up, ripple on the water, and bang, I hooked
the
into that salmon.
Salmon chop.
Yeah, you just need just a little ripple is all you need. It's amazing.
That's all you need,
yeah.
Well, you know, the water is so low, you know, and just the line hitting the water, and I think they dispersed. You know, they just spread out.
Yeah.
So when you get that ripple, it doesn't scare them so much.
Yeah.
I think that's it.
Okay.
If you get more of a ripple and you get some waves, then the fishing is really good.
Yeah, yeah.
As a rule.
Yeah.
Not always, but as a rule. Before we go, I must mention a fellow down there at Grand Lake Stream by the name of Lou Savin. He is the expert nymph fisherman at Grand Lake Stream and probably other places, but he has a home there in Grand Lake Stream, summer home, and he fishes Grand Lake Stream in the hatchery pool on the far side. And he uses that corner. Everybody knows Lou down there. He's a peach of a guy, and he knows how to fish him. And we were sitting at the Elm at the canal side about mid-afternoon there, Norm and I, your engineer, and in comes Lou Savin. Well, he sat there, didn't he, Norm? He sat there and talked to us for 2 hours. I didn't think he was going to get out of there until we get the evening fishing.
he's the walking encyclopedia of fishing Grand Lake Stream.
Loaded with information. I told him he should write a book.
Well,
oh, no, he says, but we should dictate to him. I'm telling you, he knows nymph fishing.
Well, we probably ought to get him.
He knows the depth.
Yeah.
You know, the right load, how many, two nymphs on a line, and it has to be just so. I mean, he's done this for years, and he'll go down there and catch 10, 12 salmon when there aren't any.
Yeah.
That's how good he is.
Well, you know, a little sidebar, Bob, if I might. I sort of dismissed the West Branch after reading Tim Obrey's fishing summary. He said the water was going to be so low in the West Branch there wouldn't be any fishing. So I kind of dismissed the idea of going to the Big Eddy, and I was talking to a friend on a text message today who was up in the Little Eddy and caught a 20-inch salmon on a number 20 blue-winged olive.
Wow.
Even the fishing, there's fish to be had even on the Big Eddy, which kind of surprised me.
Well, you know, most of the fish we caught were 19, 20 inches.
Yeah, yeah. Well, they
were nice fish.
Yeah, that one I caught, Bob, I don't know if Scotty told you, but I let out a couple of haulers because he did a wicked dance. I mean, five or six good jumps and just danced around in the water. I had a ball. It was great.
Well, you know, Mac did the same thing when he hooked one.
Did he? Yeah.
He was one of those Salmo Salas Sebagos, you know. The leaper.
The leaper, yeah.
He was in the air, and Mac was dancing all over the place.
Oh, yes. There's nothing like a salmon on the fly rod. Yeah, great.
I know, nothing like it, is it? It's fantastic.
Nothing
to compare. We all had a great time. It's wonderful.
Yeah, can't wait for spring.
Too.
Yeah, looking for spring already. Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Anything else on your mind tonight, Bob?
I guess that'll do it tonight. Maybe have something extra for you next week.
Okay. And now, is it time to hang up the fly rods, or is it too early for guys like you?
Oh, no. You can fish places at Grand Lake Stream that extended the season another 5 days, you know, from the 20th to the 25th of October.
Okay. You can't do that on the West Branch. It's over, I think, on the West Branch.
No, but you can go up to East Outlet and fish the year-round.
Oh, that's right. Good point. Yeah.
Yeah. And there's, of course, warm water. There's a lot of warm water lakes and ponds. You can still get perch in, but I would check your logbook, make sure, you know.
Well, I put my fishing gear away. I think I couldn't top that, that salmon.
Yeah, I have too, yeah. That's right. I fell in too many times this year.
All right. All right. Well, good to talk to you, Bob, and we appreciate the fishing report. And take care. Yep.
My pleasure. Good night.
Bye-bye. Okay, that was the fishing report. And again, at 7:30, we're going to hook up with Art Wheaton down there in Forest City. We're going to talk about the distinction between a grouse and a partridge. Now, you think you know the answer to that, but you may not completely. I think you're going to find this interesting. We're going to plumb that a little bit. And then right after the outdoor trivia question, I'm going to have a little mini seminar with you on the rutting moon. I learned some interesting things about the rut and the rutting moon that I'll share with you. Right after we do the outdoor trivia question. And again, tonight we're going to give away, it's the first of the month, so we're going to give away a subscription for a year, a complimentary subscription to the Northwoods Sporting Journal, worth about $30. And you have to know the answer to the question, and here is the question. The question is, who still holds the state record for the biggest buck in the state of Maine, and what did it weigh when it was field dressed? I repeat the question. Who still holds a state record for the biggest buck shot in Maine, and what did the animal weigh after it was field dressed? If you know the answer, 1-800-966-1039. Ponder that, and we'll be right back.
Next on 101.3 Augusta, 103.9 Bangor, 95.1 Rockland, the voice of Maine.
Okay, we're ready to give you a subscription to the Northwood Sporting Journal worth $30. If you can tell me the answer to this question, who still holds the state record for the biggest buck taken to Maine, and what did that buck weigh after it was field dressed? Good evening, caller. You're on Maine Outdoors.
Yes, I believe the gentleman was Horace Hinckley and it dressed at 355 pounds.
Well, that's right on. What's your first name, winner?
First name was Fern.
Where are you calling from, Fern?
Norway.
From Norway. All right. Congratulations. Now, what'd you do? Google that? How'd you know the answer to that?
No. I read about that, and it's been written up in your journal and also in the Sportsman Alliance event. I mean, the main sportsman.
Oh, the other one.
They have the other one.
Oh, yeah.
I get both of them.
Oh, good. And I hope you read ours first.
Yes, I do.
All right.
Yes,
I'm glad to hear that. That's the right. That's very political of you. That was the right answer. Well, congratulations, Fern.
Well, it's also the truth.
Yeah. Did you know what they estimated the live weight of that animal to be?
I was well over 400.
Yeah, 438 pounds, they said the thing weighed. You imagine that? A deer in Maine weighs almost 500 pounds? That is incredible.
No, I'd like to see one through my scope this fall.
Yeah, so wouldn't we all. A dream.
About 70 yards away.
Yeah, a dream come true. Unbelievable. Yeah. Anyway, that record has persisted now for 65 years, and
yes,
it may never be broken. Who knows? It's a large white-tailed deer.
Well, actually, I guess I would hope not.
Yeah.
I would hope not.
Yeah.
I mean, that was a long time ago, and the hunting equipment that was available to people, it was, you know, boots and a heavy jacket.
And an old 30-30, yeah. Yeah.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
That's exactly right.
I checked into this because I was writing a piece about it for the Sporting Journal. I checked into this, and I talked to the folks at the Maine Antler and Skull Trophy Group there, and he said they had an unofficial report of one taken, I think it was a couple of years ago, that weighed field dressed at 331, I think he said.
Yeah.
So that's 20 pounds away.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, anyway, congratulations to you, Fern. Anything else on your mind tonight?
No, just not. Just listening to the show. See what kind of information I can pick up.
Yeah, good.
And always learn something.
Well, good.
You can always learn something.
Well, I appreciate that. That's good to know. You're up in Norway, you say, huh?
Yes.
Yeah, is the signal okay up there?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, amazing. Okay, well, congratulations to you, Fern. We appreciate you listening to the show, and we're glad you won. If you'll stay on the line here, Norm's going to get your address, and we'll get you signed up for a subscription, okay?
Very good.
Okay, and
good
luck to you this fall.
Yeah, you too.
I hope you get the big one.
As long as I get one, I'll be all right.
There you go. I know how you feel.
We don't need antlers.
No,
we don't need antlers.
No, right. Just something for the freezer,
nice.
Right?
That's right.
A little
back strap
for the freezer. Okay, Fern, stay on the line, would you?
I will do that.
Okay, thank you. That was the correct answer, and Fern up in Norway had it. Horace Hinckley, and he was from Augusta, actually. And according to the story, he was hunting up in the Fletcher Mountain area, which I think is near Bingham. And he was hunting with his wife. And she dispatched a 200-pound buck not far from where he was on stand, and she began yelling at him to come help. And instead of going right to her, as most of us husbands would do, to help her with a deer, he just had a hunch, and he stayed still, quiet, and waited. Apparently, he may have seen some other activity in that area. But anyway, he had a good hunch. He waited, and it wasn't more than 5 minutes later that big bruiser walked into his crosshairs. So it's really quite a story. The Horace Hinckley buck, field dress, 355 pounds. If you'd like to see a photo of that deer and you've never seen it, you can go to our website at www.sportingjournal.com. And if you click on hunting, it's the top story in the pile there. You'll see a photo of the Hinckley deer and a real nice story about Hinckley's experience. That's the Northwood Sporting Journal's website, www.sportingjournal.com. Okay, in a few minutes, we'll be taking our 7:30 break, and after that, we'll be hooking up with Art Wheaton down there at Forest City. We're going to talk about the distinction between a grouse and a partridge. You think you may know the answer, but you may not. So we'll wait and see how we break that down with our guest, Art Wheaton. Right now, I just want to make a quick couple of points to you. I did some interesting reading about the rutting moon, and last year, Norm, do you know what the rutting moon is?
I don't have a clue.
Okay.
Never heard of it.
Well, there are two theories. There's the lunar theory, which says that the moon guides the rut period.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the Levine theory,
Jerry Levine,
that it's always the 15th of November come hell or high water. So anyway, two different theories. But if you're going to go by the lunar theory, last year. It's the second full moon of the autumnal, did I say that right? Equinox, the autumn equinox.
Yeah.
And the second full moon will be October 31st.
Ooh, that's
this
late.
Year.
That's late.
So usually guys plan their hunt around the middle of the month because they want to be right there for the top of the rut. Now, I don't know if this, I don't know where the truth is. I don't know the truth. But I'm just telling you what the lunar theory is. And the fellow who developed it is a very respected, knowledgeable deer guy who really knows deer, Charlie Alzheimer, I think his name is. And anyway, his theory is that it's the lunar theory. And maybe Jerry Levine, who listens to us regularly every week, maybe he wants to counter that. I don't know. Maybe he doesn't care to. But anyway, the lunar theory dictates that last year it was the 12th of November, but this year it's the 31st. So you might want to plan an early hunt if the lunar theory is impressive to you. It looks like the sweet spot would be November 3rd.
Either that or get into black powder.
There you go. Right. So anyway, November 3rd is supposedly, according to the lunar theory, that's going to be the chief of the rut will be November 3rd. And, of course, it's on both sides of that, but that's what they call the peak. And I don't know if Jerry Levine has any thoughts on the lunar theory. I think I've discussed it with him, but I'm not sure what his response was. But he clings to the argument that it's November 15th. Of course, he knows his stuff when it comes to white-tailed deer. So you got two different theories there, and maybe someday somebody will be able to prove it beyond a doubt, but I'm not sure of that. Anyway, we're going to be talking to Art Wheaton in a few minutes. If you want to weigh in on the rutting moon theory, that's the second full moon after the autumn equinox, which is September 23rd. And so there's two full moons after that, and the second full moon will be Halloween. And it's also called not the harvest moon. The harvest moon was the first moon.
Is that a blue moon?
Yeah. The second moon, it's a blue moon when there are two moons in the same month.
Right.
So the rutting moon, or the hunter's moon, so they call it, is also a blue moon.
Okay, yeah, that would make sense. Yeah. It's two in the same month, right?
You didn't know I knew astronomy, did you?
You're doggone pretty
Are you impressed?
Good. I am impressed.
You can learn a lot by reading books, right?
Or listening to the program.
Yeah. Or reading bumper stickers, too.
That's true.
Yeah, right. Okay, 1-800-966-1039 is the number if you want to be on the program, and we encourage you to take part. You're listening to us on the Voice of Maine, News Talk Network, 101.3 Augusta, 103.9 Bangor, 95.1 down in the seacoast town of Rockland. And again, if you call us, we ask you to turn your radio down so you don't get that distracting echo. All right, I guess we'll take a break right now, and we'll hook up on the phones with Art Wheaton.
Sounds good.
We'll be right back.
More Maine Outdoors next on 101.3 Augusta, 103.9 Bangor, 95.1 Rockland, the voice of Maine.
Okay, a little footnote here. I stand corrected. According to Jim Layton, who checked the law book, the bag limit for grouse is 4 a day and is an 8 possession limit, right?
Correct.
I get it right. Anyway, good luck to you on the grouse fields. Are you there, Mr. Wheaton?
Yes, good evening, Paul.
Good evening to you, Art. Thanks for being with us. We appreciate you taking the time.
You bet.
How are you tonight?
Pretty good for an old guy.
Yeah, me too. Me too. Hey, Art, before we get talking about the distinction between a grouse and a partridge, would you tell our folks who may not know you as well as I do a little bit about your background?
Well, I grew up in the state of Maine, over on the Washington County, Grand Lake Stream area. Went to the University of Maine, and then I spent my whole career in the shooting industry with Remington. And was able to buffalo them for about 40 years.
All right. And you're a member of the Old Pat Society, too, I read, right?
I am.
Yeah.
And we've been, a group of us hunters have shared October for about 40 years now.
Oh, you're still doing it?
Still doing it, limping along and hoping the hills are a lot less of an incline as they used to be.
Yeah, they get steeper and steeper, don't they?
They seem to.
Yeah. Well, it's a pleasure to have you aboard. And you're also, you didn't mention it, but you're a member of the Fable Wheaton clan down there in Forest City. And your whole family have been guiding for years, right?
Yes, that's right. Of course, we grew up with my father, who guided out of Grand Lake Stream and then up in the Forest City area, international water. So we all kind of grew up in the business.
You bet. Are you still guiding, or have you kind of hung up your hat on that?
Only when somebody will tolerate me.
Oh, yeah. All right. Okay, well, it's nice to have you aboard. I want to set the stage a little bit with something here. A few weeks ago, Art, I had a guest whose name is Paul Fuller, and he writes a gundog column for the Northwood Sporting Journal. Lives sure. over in southern New Hampshire. I forget the town. Durham. He lives in Durham, New Hampshire. Anyway, we had him on, and he kind of got talking a little bit about, he kind of turned his nose down, I guess you'd say, putting it charitably, those folks like Norm who like to shoot grouse on the ground. And
I don't own a dog.
And he doesn't own a dog, right? So I want to just play a little bit of this for you. I hope it works. I hope you can hear it at home. I have not done this before. I've just got a little tape recorder here. I'm going to try to play this.
Okay, sure.
I want you to hear what he had to say, and it'll just take a second, okay? Here we go.
Drove up to the... He had never been to the North Maine woods, and I told him that that's my favorite spot for grouse hunting. And he'd gone up there, and he drove through one of the gates, and he drove around for 3 hours... He never saw a bird. He came out. He drove all the way home, which was about a five-hour drive from him, and called me and yelled at me. He says, I never saw a bird. I drove around for several hours. I never saw a bird. Well, first of all, you know, there's so many different things that determine whether the birds are on the road. If you go a little later in the season, most of the, and I'm going to say this cautiously, but with respect to the native Maine hunter, most of the road birds are shot off as juvenile birds when they haven't gained any smarts yet. And so they're shot off early. A Maine forester once told me that he thought that after the first week, like, at least 60 to 70% of all the road birds have been shot. So, you know, you and I know you're a bird dog man. You and I like to hunt them over bird dogs, where there's dog work, we have a point, we flush the bird, and we shoot the bird on the wing. That's not done by all of the hunters, and again, it's not against the law, so I'm not saying...
Well, that was going to be my question. Do you have a problem with guys like Norm that shoot them on the road? Wow.
Yeah, I probably do.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Could you hear that okay, Art?
Sure.
Okay,
sure.
So he has problems with guys, that the ground swatters that shoot them on the ground. And you and I chatted a little bit by email about this, and I thought you had a real thoughtful attitude about the whole thing. And the fact you're working on a book, and you shared a part of a chapter with me where you did some really great writing about this whole issue. And I thought it'd be interesting to maybe talk a little bit about this with you, get your views on this, and it may provoke some calls from some of our listeners, I'm not sure. But we know, you know as well as I know, that there are hundreds and hundreds of ground hunters in Maine. I mean, it's a favorite pastime. You get dozens of people driving the North Maine woods roads sure. looking for a grouse to shoot on the ground, right?
Sure.
Your thoughts on this?
Well, needless to say, it's a complex issue.
Right.
And it comes down a lot to a basic question of why do we hunt? You know, and the painfully obvious answer becomes for table fare or meat.
Right.
But it can change with age, with experience, with resources. But ultimately, I think there's a thrill, whether it be adventure, an adrenaline rush, if you will, involved in hunting. Now, we've identified why you hunt, but the question is the terms by which you choose to take your game. And I would suggest that many of us that grew up in a rural environment never learned to hunt in a different way. It's pretty popular. It's successful. And I think there's a measure of excitement and thrill for anyone to shoot a grouse or a partridge. And so I leave it at that. It's the terms by which you choose to take the game.
with the exception that as long as you stay within the guidelines of the state and federal regulations, that's up to you. I would suggest to you there's some examples that I might put in front of you. Let's say I have a local woodcutter that rides back and forth to work every day. He carries a single-shot shotgun in his pickup truck, taped at the wrist, pretty rusty, and he gets 15 to 20 birds a season. He's a pretty diligent guy that has to work all day long cutting trees, and he doesn't have really time or a dog to get in the woods. So do we say to ourselves that that should not be allowed? I suggest to you that he may very well get the same excitement out of it that I do. And on the other side of the coin is not everybody is going to be a wing shooter. It's difficult. It takes a lot of time, it takes practice, and it takes opportunity to learn how to do it. So I think there's a broad spectrum there of how you choose to take your game. Let me use a couple analogies. Many of us bass fish and pan fish, and we catch them on a worm. I would much prefer to catch a smallmouth bass or largemouth bass on a topwater bait of some sort. And I think that boils it down to what the terms that we choose individually to take the game. We obviously operate with all kinds of rules and regulations imposed by the feds and the state. But as you advance along the sporting journey, if you will, sometimes why we hunt and why we do it changes. It changes the older you get. It changes with the resources that you have, the camaraderie. A lot of things start to change. But that doesn't take away from what I say, those that get an opportunity to hunt maybe on a weekend and they choose to hunt the roads. So I'm not objectionable to it. In my book on grouse country, I admitted right up front, the very first chapter, that the first grouse I ever shot was off a stump. And I said in the chapter, it was just like shooting an elephant, because it was the biggest deal that I'd ever had happen to me.
Yeah. The first bird I ever shot was in the head with a 22.
There you go.
Now, that's fair. Is that fair chase? Is all of this fair chase, do you think?
I think it's in the eyes of the beholder.
Yeah.
Personally, I think if it gives you that kind of excitement to take game that way, I don't have any objection to it.
All right.
I would argue that if exposed to a different fair chase with dogs and learning how to wing shoot, that it becomes a different level of how you participate in it. But I think we in Maine find that we're too hasty sometimes to make a judgment of folks that have the only opportunity to hunt roads, hunt big woods, and have never had exposure to really hunt with dogs or to shoot birds on the wing.
Yeah. One of the points that Paul Fuller made, you didn't hear it on the tape, but one of the points he made on the show was that once a ground swatter has experienced wing shooting a grouse over a dog, they would not want to go back, which I think is an interesting point. As you say, hunters evolve, and it does take a certain amount of money to be a dog man. I've had a setter, and I had to have some training for the setter, and you know, there's some expense involved, and a lot of folks can't afford to even own a dog like that.
It's a huge commitment, you know,
yeah.
And not everybody's up for that kind of commitment.
And it's a time commitment, too.
Mm. Oh, yeah, huge. Training. I mean, yeah. You're going to train a dog.
Yeah, yeah.
I think it is, and I think you don't learn to wing shoot with just a couple of times over a hand trap. It takes a fairly diligent effort, and also to hunt with a dog. So, yes, you can evolve to it. Some people do, I'd like to see them do that, because once they experience it, they find a new higher level of excitement. But again, it comes right back to the in the eyes of the beholder. If in fact your objective is for table fare, staying within the limits, I think that's your choice. You know, I've had any number of people up in the, especially up in the big North Maine woods, where oftentimes the covers are not conducive to hunt with dogs, big trees, not a lot of underbrush, and it's probably the easiest way to take a partridge. But if some of those folks had experienced hunting with a dog, and like you say, Paul, that can be expensive to own a dog and train it to hunt a month, 4 to 4 or 5 weeks a year, is a pretty big expense.
You bet. We have a caller standing by who may have a question for you, Art. I think we'll take it.
Sure.
Good evening, caller. You're on Maine Outdoors with Art Wheaton. Go ahead.
Hi, this is Jim from Carmel. How are you?
Hey, Jim. Oh, Jim Thorne, last week's co-host. Thank you for hosting the show last week, Jim. What's going on?
I had to help out when I can. And I did find out that I can't host the show until after the election.
Oh, is that right? Okay. So
that's in order to be fair time.
Okay. Hmm. You have a question
date for another one.
All right. You have a question for Art?
Well, I used to hunt deer when they were standing broadside, and I found that was very boring. So now when I see a deer standing broadside, I whistle or yell at it to get it running before I shoot at it.
Now, surely you jest.
I do jest.
Yeah.
You know, I have a lot of buddies that they like to eat partridge, and if they wing shoot them, you know, that's not very precise, and it fills the breast up with feathers and lead, and they like to shoot it and take the head off it. So,
take care of the meat, yeah.
That's the way they like to do them. So.
Any comment on that, Art?
No. Obviously, they're very skilled at what they do in putting a lot of pellets in them. Personally, I'm of the fringing group. If I can fringe them, I'm doing well.
Enjoying the show. Have a good night.
I appreciate the call, Jim. Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.
Okay, Art, I want to put a you're a thoughtful guy and you express yourself so well. I want to put a thought to you, and then I got to take a quick commercial break, give you time to think about an answer.
Sure.
I want to have you explain to me and our listeners, if you would, your definition in the realm of hunting, your definition, and say in the realm of grouse shooting, grouse hunting, partridge hunting, what is your definition of fair chase? All right?
Mm-hmm.
And we'll take a quick break, and if you stay with us, Art, we'll be back and have you talk about that.
Sure.
Thank you. All right, for those of you who just joined us, I want to remind you this program is sponsored in part every week by General Appliance and Brewer, place to go for all of your camp appliance needs. Doesn't matter if you're talking about gas lights, refrigerators, freezers, or top-of-the-line compost toilets.
Ride the wave, baby.
You betcha. A family-owned business since the 1920s. Al has been running the show over there for many years, and he's a great guy to do business with. He stands behind everything he sells. He installs and services everything he sells. So if you're in the market for a used or new appliance, whether it's gas or electric, he's the guy to talk with. The prices are very fair, and he's got some wonderful appliances over there. Check him out at 91 Center Street in Brewer, and the number to call is 989-3714. Al's a friendly guy. He's always wearing his mask there in the office, so you'll be safe over there. But you can stop in for a personal visit if you like to. He always has the coffee pot on. General Appliance and Brewer, 91 Center Street. They've been sponsoring this program for many, many years. And all of us here, we patronize him, and we urge you to do so as well. General Appliance in Brewer. Okay, we have another caller?
Yes, we do.
Okay, we're going to have another caller. You still there, Art?
Sure.
Thank you, sir. Let's take a call. Good evening. You're on Maine Outdoors with Art Wheaton.
You can go ahead.
Go ahead, caller.
Hello?
Yes,
yeah, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. Yeah, my husband told me that you guys were talking about grouse hunting, which is my passion.
Yeah.
And we just got back from the Allagash, and there were lots of birds up there.
Now,
lots of birds.
Are you a wing shooter or are you a ground swatter?
I actually am both. We have Brittany's, so we hunt with our Brittany's, but we also will shoot some ground birds if the dogs are in the truck.
Oh, so you cross over.
Yeah,
that's interesting. Yeah, all right. How was the grouse hunting up north?
Amazing, amazing. We were up in the Allagash, and there was so many birds.
Okay,
so
great.
So many birds up there.
What's your first name?
Stacy.
Say again, please.
My name is Stacy.
Stacy, okay, Stacy. Do you have a question for Art?
Let's see. So what for this year in terms of the grouse population, why are there so many more grouse this year than there have been in the past?
Boy, that's a biological question, but the best I can understand is that we've had a very dry spring, and it has helped the grouse hatch very well. They seem to have done extremely well. We're seeing more broods all over the place, more than we've seen before.
The bird biologist Brad Allen echoed your sentiments on that, Art, and told us back early in the fall that it was such a good brooding season in the spring that he expected there would be pretty good turnout of grouse.
Yeah, I'm hearing the same reports all over, and I'm going up north, up toward Mars Hill, up that way next week, and I understand the leaves are down considerably, which suits me. I tend not to hunt too early because of too many leaves. I can't see them.
Yeah.
And I need the ability to see them before I can shoot them in the air.
All right. Are you still there, Stacy?
I'm still here, yes.
Do you have any thoughts on, do you know the difference between a grouse and a partridge?
Is it one that's, I think, is it a partridge that's on the ground and a grouse that flies?
Yeah, I think that's it. That was Wiggy Robinson's favorite joke. Yeah, you're right, I guess. Do you have any thoughts on fair chase? Do you have any problem with people who exclusively shoot on the ground?
No, I don't have a problem with what other people do, if that's what they choose to do.
Yeah.
For me, I mean, I love working our dogs. So seeing our dogs work and working together and is more fun. If we go out without the dogs, it's just not as much fun. So that's what people do is what they do. And, as long as you take the game and eat it and, take it home and eat it. Yeah,
and obey the laws and the bag limits. It doesn't matter,
exactly.
Really. Right? Yeah,
absolutely.
Well, you know, I was a gun dog guy for many, many years, and after I lost my English setter, I kind of lost the inspiration to get out there and beat the bush without the dog, and it's just different. It's there's something about if you have a dog and you work a dog, it's really what the hunt's almost all about. Wouldn't you agree, Art?
Yeah, I think it takes it to a new level.
Yeah.
And just as your caller mentioned, I think that's exactly right. Not everybody has the opportunity to do that. Either their resources don't allow for it, they don't know how to approach it, and always have to take that into consideration. It's how much time have you got available to do something, and what is the most exciting to you? I have a dentist that can't wait until the fall, and that's what he does is rides the roads.
And he loves every minute of it, right?
He loves every minute of it, and I can't take that away from him.
No.
He doesn't exceed the limit. But where I cross over the line is somebody that decides that they can run a four-wheeler up and down the roads and shoot a basket full of birds and get away with it.
Yeah.
I take exception to that.
Yeah, well, me too. I think anybody would.
Right.
Yeah.
I think with having dogs takes a huge commitment and a lot of training.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, constant training. It's not, you train them and then they're done. You're training their lifetime.
Oh, yeah. It is. It is a big responsibility. And Brittany's are great. I never had a Brittany. I had English setter, but I guided a little bit for Matt Libby up at Libby Camps with his Brittany's, and they're darling dogs. I love those little Brittany's. Yeah, they're sweethearts.
They're terrific family dogs.
Yeah, they are.
Pretty hard to beat.
Yeah.
And absolutely.
He had an old one there named Bullet. I think Bullet has passed on since, but Bullet was old and slow, but very thorough and just a great dog to hunt behind. Yep. Well, thanks,
Stacy. What's
Stacey.
Really wonderful is that, just one more comment, what's yep. really wonderful is that we have children, and our son has hunted for the first time up in the Allagash and shot his first birds, and, you know, to get him out with our dogs and to get him out in the outdoors and feel confident and enjoy, you know, what we're doing, it's just great.
Oh, yeah, and he'll be hooked for life. That's great. Thank you, Stacy. We appreciate your input, and good luck to
thanks,
you.
Speaker.
All right.
Thank you.
All right, in the time left, could you give us your definition? Do you have a personal definition of fair chase?
Boy, it's so complex because I think it gravitates back to my initial suggestion is it's really term limits, whether that's self-imposed or federal or state regulated, or in a combination of both.
Right.
How you choose to take your game within the limits is a personal choice, and I think in some ways fair chase is defined in that way.
Yeah.
If I was speaking to the wing shooter using bird dogs, fair chase would say you don't shoot a bird up in the tree that landed in a tree, the dog put it up.
Yeah.
You don't shoot a rabbit in front of a bird dog.
Right.
Some of those basic things come into play, but crossing back over to the other side, you know, why is it not okay to take your son or your grandson out there to shoot a partridge and get him hooked for life?
You bet.
On the sport.
Yeah.
And then teach him the next stage.
Right.
I took mine out and he missed one. But he will never forget.
All right. We are just out of time, Art. The time has gone so fast. I really appreciate you taking the time to be with us here on Maine Outdoors. And I wish you a pleasant fall. I hope you have some great hunting up in Mars Hill area. And good luck with your new book. And I can't wait to read it. When is it coming out?
Well, I don't know. Maybe next year.
I hope so. All right. Take care, Art. Thanks a lot. We appreciate you being aboard.
Good talking to you, Paul. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. Yep. Bye-bye. All right, that wraps up the show. Next week, and I wanted to thank Jim Thorne for hosting last week, by the way. Next week, we're going to have Richard Harwood, who has the new bear record to taking a black bear with a bow, 500-plus pounds.
Yeah, that's a big one.
And so we'll be talking to him about his adventure, and we'll see you all next week right here on
Maine Outdoors.